Live from the Gregory Ricks and Associates Studios, this is News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
Welcome. Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks and James Parker, but James Parker's on, what is it? He was Thanksgiving, Black Friday, and I guess he's doing Small Business Saturday, as we all should. Once again, I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, and we're live here on News Talk Radio from 10 o'clock until 1 o'clock. Then Dwayne Stein, host of Mortgage Gumbo, picks up that next hour. I am the 401k and retirement authority. Been in the financial services world for, darn, if I count the years, then I start showing my age, but probably somewhere about 35 years? Wow. Got in the industry after college at Southern Miss. About 21, 22 years old, and now I'm 56. So, yeah, gosh, when you do the math, that's a long time, and so much has happened. Everything changes, and that's one of the things that I think is important to know about this, is you can't always look at it the same. Well, this is what we did in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and it still works today. And I'd say, no, it doesn't. And that's where you have to keep up with what's going on now. Try to have some insight into what's coming. And always look in that rearview mirror so you can look at the past, because there's always something to learn. You know, things happen for a reason. Things repeat for reasons in the past where you can look back and find that and help have guidance for the future. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it will repeat that way again. So you're kind of always making adjustments, just like what the buy and hold period was versus the norm now, which is volatility. And, you know, there's always debates going about that. Is that buy and hold? And I think it's tried to be used a lot. And if you're given enough time, it seems to work out. But when we have more often downward movements back up in the market, and somebody's taking income, that's kind of called reverse dollar cost averaging, because it creates more of a spend down than it does keeping it level or accumulation, where dollar cost averaging over history enabled you to buy lower than the average prices overall, thus being an improvement on your portfolio over the longer time. I'm going to talk about a lot of different things today. I kind of have free rein. It's my show, no co-host. I'm going to review some about self-directed IRAs today and real estate. We're going to talk about fixed annuities a little bit, and I'll tell you why I think it should be in the mix. And it's not, once again, a one-size-fits-all, but it goes to how you change your thinking and how to look at things a little bit differently. And one of the things that we go back, which, darn, we're close to being on this show for 6.5 years. Now, I think next week or about 10 days from now, something like that, makes us 6.5 years. So one of the things when we started this show was to kind of give you a different take, instead of just that same old story you repeatedly hear of, you know, for example, stay the course, hold on, It's going to be fine. We don't need to make adjustments. And sometimes you need to hear there's a little bit different slant, whether it's the what financial tools to use into the mix, or maybe have a deeper explanation of how they work. And that's, you know, some of what we set out to do. And also to give you a voice. And that's live radio that we've done from day one. My peers were kind of amazed. I was spoke at a conference a few months ago before some of the nation's top advisors, given my take on how to run a business, how to provide customer service, and kind of my overall philosophy in this industry, being I've done it for over 30 years. I do have something to say and a take. And you know, it's always a learning process. Tell you, I haven't been perfect over the years. We always try our best, but when we find a gap or something has changed, that's what we're looking for, is to make adjustments as we go and always improving. I was talking with a lady the other day, and she was listening to some audio that I overheard, and she said, you know, it's self-help type stuff to improve yourself. And I said, that's one of the things I started doing when I finished college and went into this industry, is always about improving, you know. So that goes, and I tell you what, when I was 21, I needed a lot of improving. And the job's not finished yet. I don't think you ever finish that or rest on your laurels that, oh, I've arrived. And I just can't think that way. As far as my business, always has to get better. Not necessarily bigger, but getting better. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand, that it does continue to grow with being better at money management, philosophies, strategies, safe money ideas, customer service, doing the right thing, and being a better human being. All of that kind of ties together. Oh, listening. Listening is really important. A lot of people don't do very well at listening and understanding. We're live here. The phone number is 504-260-0995. You have me for 3 hours. In hour two, what do we have scheduled? Angie, I'm looking at my list to see. Jude Heath is in hour two of Heath & Company CPAs. So he's kind of our wealth team authority on taxes, accounting, everything to do with the accounting and CPA side of our world. And then Dwayne Stein of Cross Country Mortgage and host of Mortgage Gumbo will be with us in the 12 o'clock hour. Be sure to tune in for that. He always has some surprises for us, and always love his take on things. I'm not sure what our topic is, but I know I'm going to ask him some questions about reverse mortgages. That comes up a lot of times in the office, and a lot of it is that for real? I don't know. It's something about commercials running late at night creates skepticism. And hey, it's kind of entertaining late night, which I don't do that much anymore. I watched Brother Martin's football game last night and then went to sleep afterwards as well. A lot of friends and family went to the game. They weren't too happy about that game. So I'm going to shift gears just for a moment on that, since that came up. But yeah, I didn't do no late night. I went to sleep. So I was asleep when family arrived back home from the game. And Stacy said, it was miserable. Well, part of it is because Brother Martin lost to Scotlandville, and I can't remember the final, I think it was 18-16 was the final. Maybe it was 20-18, something like that. They lost by two, had a chance to tie the game up right there close to the end, and didn't pull off the two-point conversion. But she was amazed at the facilities. They were horrible. And I said, well, that was, and they could have played, she said they could have played at a better facility in the Baton Rouge area, but they chose not to. That's called home field advantage. They're used to playing there. Everybody else isn't. And they're 11-0 going in, or 12-0 now, something to that effect. And then I also was monitoring the score between John Curtis and Evangel, which Evangel came down from Shreveport and put a beating on the number one team there. It was 27-6 was that final. And I said, gosh. And Curtis had beat Brother Martin earlier in the year, so I thought that'd been a cool matchup if they ended up together. But both of them were knocked out. And if Brother Martin had made, I just don't see how they would have beat Evangel. And I don't see Scotlandville Hornets having a chance against that well-balanced team that's going to come back here and play in the Dome next Friday at 8:30. Those two are going to match up.
Who's the number one team right now?
Well, Curtis? It was Curtis, and Evangel beat them with an 11-2 record, but you have Scotlandville that's undefeated, but they probably will hold the number one seed. I'm just thinking for that game. When you go look at records, 11-0 versus a team with two losses, which was, they started 0-2 and have won out since, and put a strong beating on John Curtis, which kind of was a surprise.
I
figured that would be a closer game, and it could go either way, but I didn't know enough about Evangel to see that happen. So, be interesting game, but but you still got to play it. Hey, I might be completely wrong and shocked the other way, but Scotlandville doesn't even have a kicking game. They were horrid on special teams, but they've got a great defense, and that's something that always counts. And big news of the morning at noon, it looks like LSU's going to introduce Coach Orgeron as the new permanent coach of LSU football, is the word that I'm getting. So, hey, I'm kind of pumped about that. I'm a big Coach O fan. You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
And update you daily. Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
You're listening to Winning at Life. This is the weekly wrap. We do the daily wrap every night at 7 o'clock. If some reason we're preempted, Pelicans kind of do that to us a couple times a week in some of our markets that we're on, just jump over to your iHeartRadio app and pick us up on the stream. You can also connect to that if you have the Gregory Ricks and Associates app as well. You can message the show through the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. Just go to the Winning at Life tab on your app, and then there'll be another tab for message the show. But you can connect to your dashboard if you're a client, receive notifications, alerts, and just so much more. And we're always working on improving the app that we have. This is live radio, so if you want ask a question, you have a financial situation you're looking for a little bit of help with, maybe it's survivor benefits, you should do your beneficiary designations, maybe it's the 401k analyzer you want to ask about that we have, could be those A share, B share, or C share mutual funds, and what's up with that versus institutional, or the difference between ETFs, or what's up with variable annuities? The phone number is 504-260-0995. You can email me, gregory@gregoryricks.com. There's a site chat at our website, which is gregoryricks.com. Let's see, what's other math? Oh, the app. Download the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. Just go to your app store and do a search and download it. It is free. There's just a one-time login. Just gives us just a tiny bit of data, and that's the only time you have to log in, unless you delete the app and reload it for some reason. I know some errors happen like that as well. So once again, 504-260-0995. We're going to have Jude Heath, CPA, in hour two and hour three. Dwayne Stein, host of Mortgage Gumbo. Had an individual come in this week, and one of the, he's kind of unhappy about how things have gone and just doesn't feel that he's really being looked out for. And it turns out it's obviously a local bank that has a brokerage firm, and he has all C-share mutual funds. Never enough, though. James Parker gets on to me all the time about how many tabs. There's one day, I think, how many tabs did he count? 18 tabs. Said they're all needed. I've used them throughout the day. Very important stuff. So, but look, I went on, and I don't see that I still have Morningstar, so he'd be happy. I've only got, let's see, 7-9 tabs open at this time. Gosh, it's like nothing for me. But it was an American Funds Euro Pacific, and which one? It was the equity fund. Euro Pacific, I think, is the money manager inside of that American fund. And he had C shares. His expense ratio was 1.62, and he had a 12B1 fee of 1%, and he's still inside of the first year of having put his money in that fund, which means there's a 1% exit on it. So that's kind of to cover the load. But you get that it's a mutual fund, an equity mutual fund with 2.62% annually on fees. So tell me, how do you get ahead when you're doing that? You're starting out the gate down 2.6% every year. And he calls something regarding our fees are kind of high. My fees range from basically, technically would be a 0.5% to a max of 1.5%. I say technically because we don't start out feeing immediately. We kind of get to that when it's appropriate. Your initial fee could be a few weeks out or 90 days out. We don't have a set time, but it depends on what we're transitioning, if we're putting the money to work yet in the market. And there he just left some message that I picked up the other day, and we haven't spoke back with him, but there was something regarding fees too high. And well, I know your fees are too high. It's the place that you're at. Mine are much lower. And once again, talking about my firm's fees, you sign off on whatever the fee is. If I'm going to change the fee, you sign off on that as well. There's no surprises there whatsoever. You have a complete understanding of what you're being fed. And when I explain that to everybody, they love that idea that I can't just switch the fee or whatever, or there's some surprise. And we don't use loaded mutual funds like A-Share, which basically an A-Share version of that fund I mentioned would probably have a 0.25 12B1 fee, but it would have a 5.75% load up front. kind of expensive when you have volatility and you might not want to be in the market if it corrects, or to even dial it back in that case. So that gentleman, we'll get some clarification on what the confusion was there. And that was through one meeting. And that's one reason I always talk about, I think with our firm, it's kind of a two meeting process, because we're giving you a tremendous amount of information on meeting one and haven't necessarily drilled down in everything that you're currently doing. It depends on whether or not we get statements in advance. We like to run a fee analysis, a Morningstar report, and a stress test. And that's where, you know, sometimes maybe there's a disconnect even with you as a listener, is that you can call into the show and such, but you know what? You can call my office 24/7 and I have somebody there to answer the phone for you. Look, when you think about it, I have people in the middle of the night send me an email or go to the website with our attendant even there on the website and communicate, hey, I want to come in, or I've got this question, I need help with this. So whether you're thinking about calling in here or saying, gosh, I need to sit down with Gregory, I need to sit down with Gregory's team, you know, just call the office, 504-832-9200, and get that connection started, or send us an email, or go through the app. Just open that communication up and we will follow up with you to give you some help on any situation that you have, or connecting with any of our members of the Wealth Authority. And we have estate planning help, we have CPA help, we have real estate help, we have mortgage help is there. So I figure we're pretty much kind of full from that standpoint. Another thing we've done in past, next year we're going to do a little bit more, and we kind of started out with a lot of health tips when we started the show 6.5 years ago. But we're going to sprinkle in some on a show, well, a show, but here and there throughout the week, and a few other ideas on Saturdays. But it might go with studies, basically saying, because of flavonoids, eating an apple a day does really keep the doctor away. And we know James at times gets bent out of shape over a study, but I kind of had a side talk with him, and I don't think he'll be getting so upset over studies. But he did throw out a study, and I gave him a real hard time about it. Just, you know, a taste of that on there. There was also something about eating nuts, and pecans are a good thing. Nuts reduce inflammation. Adding nuts to your diet will reduce inflammation, a major cause of cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. Researchers from Brigham and Women's Hospital looked at the levels of certain telltale proteins known as biomarkers in blood samples collected from the study participants. They measured three well-established biomarkers of inflammation, C-reactive protein, interleukin 6, and tumor necrosis factor receptor 2. And don't get upset, I butchered it all up. That's not my day job, is medical terms and medical research. They found that participants who had consumed 5 or more servings of nuts per week had lower levels of CRP and IL-6 than those who never or almost never ate nuts. I need to eat more nuts. I sure like pecans. I eat pecans daily. I don't do the apple a day, but I sure need to. So I'm trying there. We have David on hold wanting to talk about risk investing. Great, great topic. So we've got so much more to cover in the next 2.5 hours, and we're going to get to a lot of material here, some nuts and bolts. So if you have a financial situation, 504-260-0995. You're listening to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Slow rolling with the time. Welcome back. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. We're here from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock live radio. If you have a financial situation and you're looking for some help with it, you can do as David from Metairie did and call 504-260-0995. Welcome to the show, David.
Hello. How you doing?
Doing great.
I was real impressed. I've been listening for quite a few years, I guess as long as you've been there. And I was real impressed with the Brexit bond short play ETF. And it made me start looking at my situation where I've held on to my money and not lost my money, yet spent some of it over the years. And it's down to the point where I'm below your minimum investment threshold. And I always thought I needed to stay conservative, but I'm realizing at 57 with 153,000 in a 401k IRA combo at the old job, as well as Fidelity, and my wife's 20,000 to 30,000 in her current new job 401k. At our ages of 55 and 56, get where we need to go without some aggressive management. Yet I'm well below your threshold. So
how do you know you are? How do you know?
Based upon some recent advertising I've seen, and I know you say come in and meet, and then you wouldn't necessarily think that way. But before I waste someone's time, I like to hear it from you. And basically, can you make your fee structure, and can you be happy with being an aggressive, say, if I put 85% of my fund balance, which is 140-something, so 100 grand or more at risk, actually make it grow, can you then make your money and make me money, and in the next 20 years, maybe that'll be some money versus what it is, it's inadequate today?
Yeah, well, I do take a longer-term view. And when you go to form a DV, SEC and FINRA request that we put a minimum account number in there, and it's not a binding number, but I think the ADV says minimum of 150,000. Now, when we have somebody call in that is below that number, and actually I think they will set appointments on 100,000 and up. If there's a question about it, and we do a questionnaire, their task then is set up a call with an advisor for you, and you'll have a phone conversation. And what we want to make sure is it's a fit that goes both ways, just like you're asking for. Hey, I want some help. I want to grow. And is it profitable for your firm? So you understand both sides of that, and we look at that too. We look at it more so, is it a fit for you? Because, you know, when you get down to, you get under 100K, it is something we really have to look at because of our fee structure and what we're trying to do for you versus what your goals and objectives. And that's where we do, and I'm cognizant of my listeners as well. And that's where if you were to call in, we're not going to blow you off and say, oh, we can't do that, because we do want to listen and we do want to try to help. But I can tell you what, there's folks with much bigger accounts that I have turned away over the years. And it comes down to what is that fit and what they're trying to do. Sometimes it could be because they're going to burn through that money. It's headed the wrong way, and what they're doing isn't going to work, and we don't want to be a part of that. But we always want to be a part of the growth, David. And so if you were to call in, we're going to give you a little bit of help and guidance on that. And sounds like you would be in a situation that would come in for a visit.
And what I wanted to do, and you are a motivated person. I hear it on the radio every day. In other words, your fund is actually doing what you do, which is why you tell people I have no intention to retire. You know, so I want someone who has that brain to take that risk, who is not invested in the process because they enjoy it. And I want that brain to go to work for me, and I want to adjust my risk profile so that you do make that money for me, that you do make money off of me, and that this thing goes a lot further than either or one of us had hoped for based upon a good plan.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're asking for there, and my motivation is I really enjoy what I do. I plan to be doing it from now on, and we have a great service team and team of advisors as well that work for me, and we will be adding more advisors in the future. And, you know, with accounts, and we do want to help in your asset class, the amount of assets that you have, because one of the things when you look at it long term, okay, you're at say $150,000 today. Well, where do you want to be in 10 years? Well, you better want to kind of what do I think is a reasonable expectation? I think expectation of doubling the money is a good idea over a certain period of time. What would I like to see it happen? I'd like you to double. Plus you're adding on more money to that as well. And part of that is that risk analysis where you speak of aggressive. We probably won't be aggressive with you, but to be more moderate, because what we don't want is volatility to take gains away and then have to fight for that ground again. So, and we'll find that range in there to give you a broad strategies that have you growth oriented and make sure this keeps heading in the right direction and that you understand what we're doing going forward. So, thanks for the call, David. And yeah, give the office a call, 504-832-9200, and I'll make them aware that you're calling this week. Okay, that's a great call. And sometimes we're not clear on that where he's done research, and there's some pieces that we mail out, and we kind of have to put a minimum on there. But we get calls with below those minimums, and they're situational. And just like I mentioned to David, we're going to have a conversation with you about it. It's not just going to close the door. Now, if I'm holding an event, we're probably a little bit stricter on that. But if you're calling into the office seeking some help, we are going to work hard to give you some guidance, give you some help. And even if it isn't a fit right now, and let's just say somebody coming in with $49,000, and I don't know, I don't make those judgments, but my team does, and then they'll talk to me, is this something, what can we do to help this person in this situation? Because you could have a meeting and we're brainstorming of how can we help that person. So we're always going to work towards that. Let's see, we've got Mike from Houma. He picked up the phone, dialed 504-260-0995 for some help. Hey, Mike from Houma.
Good morning, sir. I was interested in trying to evaluate this present surge in the market and to find out if it makes sense to stay clear of it right now, because I've always looked in the past at P.E. ratios as an indicator of whether or not something was a decent buy. And when I got above 16 or 17, I always thought that that was something that probably was overpriced. And so now we're confronted with an S&P 500 that's selling at 26 or 27 times P.E. ratio. Companies are showing poor earnings, and yet the market continues to surge ahead. You know, we get these record highs, and it seems to me like this is kind of a fool's if, I don't know if that's a good evaluating, good word, but a fool's kind of a buy right now. Things seem like they're very overpriced, and I'm just wondering whether or not if that's a reasonable approach to evaluating stocks. And also, when we're talking about earnings, would you kind of discuss maybe what earnings we're looking at? We're not talking about gross earnings, and I don't know if it's net earnings. What are we looking at? And also, do those earnings, when they're evaluating it, have they included dividends in those earnings or not?
Hey, Mike, I'm going to interrupt you there. You mind holding, what, I got 2 minutes through the break?
I'll be happy to hold.
Hold on, and we'll pick this conversation up, and I'll give you some of my thoughts there. You're listening to Winning at Life. This is the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks, and you're doing so on iHeartRadio. It's a little too loud on the highway. I wanna pull back in your driveway. It's way too quiet at my place. Wanna come on over, come on over. I just wanna hear that ringtone. I like it turned up when you're blowing up my phone. Wanna hear you say come on over. Cause when you tell me to come on over, I like the sound of that. Welcome back. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks. Place where you can get your financial fix today for a better financial future. If you have a financial situation you're looking for some help with, this is live radio. We do this every Saturday starting at 10. We go to 1, and weeknights is the daily wrap at 7 o'clock right here on iHeartRadio. We were on with Mike, and he's still there. I didn't place him on hold or whatever during the break. But Mike was concerned about the level of the market, profit to earnings. He referred to as P&E ratios, but it's profit to earnings ratios. And that is a concern, and actually has been for a while. And are you in cash right now, Mike?
Yes, mostly. I'm afraid to do anything because I feel like I'm getting ready to step off into the void, you know?
You know what they say about when everybody is being greedy, be fearful. So we look like I still think there's a tremendous amount of cash, but this isn't necessarily every company's moving up, but a lot are being pulled up because certain companies are being bought, and what's being in favor kind of pulls everything up. Because it's indexes, so it kind of affects everything overall in the indexes. Now, you have like the Dow that can be heavily weighted to the larger companies, so you have to be careful in that as well. But we did some recent buys, and one of them was based on, we're more technical than anything at our firm, but we do look at P&E ratios, because what are we looking for? We're looking for discounts. We're looking for securities where there might be fear for some reason, and maybe unjustified. You could have a sector go bad, and you could have a couple strong companies in that sector that are getting beat down but should be at higher levels. So with that said, we've added some value, and also we've bought into, say, with the S&P 500 ETFs, we've bought into some of the rally, being very observant that it may end at some point. And we're still holding a lot of cash because we've been cautious and had a little bit different expectation that we were possibly going to get value right after the election, and it didn't come through. So you were probably observing the futures that night that the market was going to open down over 5%, and it probably would have been an ugly day and created value over the coming days. But I think let me ask you this. So I want to get a little bit more information. What is your age, Mike?
I'm 73.
Okay. Some reason I figured you were beyond, say, the age 65 of retirement. So my instincts were there on that. So one of the things is, if you're talking about equities, should you necessarily have everything in equities? And I would argue not.
Yeah, one of the options that I've been looking at, of course, is the bond market. But if you get into the primary market, you know, then you're not subject to the whims of the interest rates. And I've been looking at the primary market because I kind of feel like the interest rates are going to go up pretty soon. secondary to the Fed in December, maybe, you know, but they haven't done it for 2 years, but maybe raising rates. And I kind of feel like that'll happen in with the new administration. And so I'm reluctant to get into the bond market right now in the secondary market. The primary market would be okay, but the returns in the primary market are for a five-year bond are only about, 1.7%, if you can find that. So I'm sitting here wondering what to do,
Well, one thing we think the bonds are oversold. We're looking at the 10-year Treasury closed at 2.359, and I can tell you a month ago that was at the 1.5 range. I've got also another number here for you, just an example, because a lot more may relate to, say, mortgage interest rates. So on a 30-year fixed mortgage was 3.42% on October 6th, and as of yesterday, it closed at 4.03%. So, that's a climb of more than 0.5% in under, 60 days. We've had 0.5% movement there. Yeah. Now, here's the expectation. And then I've got another number here. I've got stats, and it turns out somebody always calls in and gives me reason to use these stats. Let me find that one here. As of close of trading on Friday before the U.S. presidential election, which was 11-4, the bond market was showing a 67% chance of a rate hike at the 12-14, December 14th meeting of the FOMC. As of the close of trading yesterday, the bond market was showing a 94% chance of a rate hike at the December 14th meeting. I've been for a week or so at 95%. Now, and if you're a regular listener, James Parker's moving around in the high 80% there. I think he was at 97 at one point, dropped off to 84, and is moving his way back up. But I'm stuck at 95%. I'm not going to say 100 because they still have to do the meeting, and she has to make that decision, announcement, and confusing press conference that she does afterwards. But I'm pretty certain we get a rate hike. If we look at what happened last December, one reason to look back at history, it doesn't make it a certainty, but it led to a January correction, which gave us discounting and maybe lower P&E there on your buys. But it could lead to an opportunity. And then if we do have a correction and one of our technicals show a correction of 5% or more, very likely between now and March 10th. So there's a number of things we're looking at. So we could lead to a market correction, which sends equities to bonds that drives back down bond interest rates. So what I'm wanting to take a look at is what are the bond prices, what are the yields around about December 14th to see whether we push some money into some short duration or start adding to our balanced income portfolio there.
Yeah.
But I would be more cautious, and I think you should have that mix. You shouldn't be 100% in equities. But I would be concerned about buying in right now unless you found some fear-priced securities at a good value. But we're not talking about waiting long. We're talking about a few weeks. In the grand scheme of things, that's a very short period of time when you're talking about keeping your assets relatively intact. So I wouldn't want to buy in something that's indicating that the price is going to go the wrong way.
Yeah.
I think from a bond and treasury standpoint, you probably have a better opportunity right now. But I'm also not necessarily talking about short-term trading. But if I'm going to buy into something and I know it's going to move down or it shows a tendency of moving up and down, and look, 20-year treasuries, can move more than 1% in a day. A few days ago, I saw them move 3% in one day. Not yield, but price. And knowing if it's at the top of a peak, I'm looking for that bottom of that peak on the trading chart. When is that going to come to me? So hopefully that's good advice for you. And you brought up a number of comments, so you have a great understanding. It's just I wouldn't just want to go load up right now based on what we see coming.
I've always placed a lot of weight on the PE ratio, and I've always been sort of a values trader, kind of a values guy. I like to get in the value side of the market. And, you know, when it's down or when things are a little underpriced. And I've always felt that the P.E. ratio was a good indicator of that. But I'm no professional, of course. I'm just, you know, more of an observer than an investor, to tell you the truth.
Well, you have a good understanding. And one last comment I'm going to add to you is when everybody's fearful, you might consider being a little greedy. Thanks for the call, Mike. Thanks for being a listener from Houma. And darn, we've done an hour already. Time flies when you're having a great time, and great callers this hour as well. Coming up in the next hour, you've got Jude Heath, CPA, member of Total Wealth Authority. You've been listening to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome. Hour two. Winning at Life. This is the weekly wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Remember, this is the place where you can get your financial fix today for a better tomorrow. This is also the hour where you might could get your tax fix for a better tax year next year. I tell you what, taxes have my attention. Maybe not as much so as the market, because actually I put more time now than ever into the money management side of what we do. If you have a financial situation and you're looking for a little bit of help, could be a lot of help. The phone number is 504-260-0995. In studio with us this hour is one of the members of the Total Wealth Authority, Jude Heath of Heath & Company. Did I get the company name?
Heath & Company. That's
Jay
right.
Heath. Well, I was going by some notes here, and it just kind of said Heath & Company, but we'll get that. Jay Heath
& Company,
okay.
Correct.
Jay Heath & Company. Wes has been a member of the Total Wealth Authority for over a year. It's a husband and wife team. You're just kind of the front of the company when it comes to dealing with being on the show and being that member of the Total Wealth Authority. But she might even be more important than behind the scenes, so we don't want to.
Absolutely. We've got a whole team, and we each direct, you know, accordingly. So we've got our strengths.
So at this time of year, what should be an individual's focus, whether it's an individual or business? And then that could be two different focuses going forward. So we've got about a month left in this tax year. So what's some of the things that people should be getting done or thinking about?
Well, what we're doing now for both individuals and businesses is planning and calculating their estimates for 2016 and starting to look at 2017. There's some considerations that need to be made about what might happen with the tax rates, what might happen with the capital gains rates. People are making these decisions on a daily basis on what they decide to do in their businesses or with their investments or those sorts of things.
So when you mention about changes, we're pretty much locked in for this year, 2016.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't think Trump can go, so, oh, let's cut last year's taxes. I don't think that's right. likely to happen, a rollback. But from what's been talked about, what is your outlook for 2017?
Well, what I've seen Trump's plans, if he can get both sections of Congress to buy into it, is to shift the capital gains structure 15 to 20% a little bit, be a little bit more a little bit more liberal on allowing some people to take advantage of some lower rates. And I think that bodes well for people in 2017. And so when we're planning, when we're estimating, it's a little late to be selling too much other than just, say, stocks or cash investments right now. But we're talking to folks about, you know, some real estate investments that they might have, you know, what they might consider doing in either 2016 or 2017. That starts for us with calculating a good estimate on 2016 to make sure they're paid in properly. We want our clients to know what their 2016 taxes are going to be within a range before the end of the year.
So there's no, you'd like to reduce the sticker shock. Correct. At least go ahead and have it happen now then later. So it sounds like your focus is making sure they have an idea of what's going to be owed. Is there some timing for our listeners? Is there timing of when that money should be at the IRS? And is there any penalty for not getting in enough?
The first deadline coming up is January the 15th. And so that is 90% or 110, depending on your income rate, of the greater or the lesser of last year or this year. In this case, it would be 16 or 15. And then, but more importantly, and that is certainly a part of the calculation, but we also want to know, and I think business owners and individuals want to know, hey, I've had a great year. I know I'm going to owe on April the 15th, additionally to January the 15th. What is it? So that I can plan the first half of my year's investment and cash needs. What do I owe to the government?
Yeah, so that complicates it, that if you're a business owner, just kind of say most businesses are small, so they're probably making quarterly estimated payments along with some withholding because they probably have a salary in the mix too. Kind of like myself, I'm on a salary with the firm, but I do get distributions throughout the year that are going to need to be taxes. I'm subchapter S, so all profits flow to me anyhow, so then that creates more tax responsibility. So if you're kind of owe the IRS still some money and you've got to make quarterly payments, that could that sometimes be a burden on a firm?
Oh, of course. It's
or
all,
individual.
Of course, it's all cash. And one thing to think about is that in terms of estimated payments, the IRS treats withheld taxes, W-2 withheld taxes, even if you withhold them on the last day of the year, December the 31st, as being equally withheld throughout the whole year. So in terms of calculating estimated tax penalty, taxes for not paying timely according to how you earn the money during the year, if you withhold, if you calculate what you owe for the year within a reasonable variance and you withhold the difference on December the 31st, then you've beaten back a little bit of the penalties that the IRS can hit you with.
Okay, so if you've not made estimated payments during the year as you possibly should have or should have, and you pile that up at the end, you're going to have some penalties.
Yes,
for not making the quarterly, but some of that can be reduced that if you load up on the withholding from your company salary at the end, it helps reduce that.
Correct. With small,
but without increasing the pay at the end, just load up with the withholding.
Just make you know the same salary payment, but just pay extra taxes.
Okay, take my last month's income and pay into them as withholding. Yikes, that's a lot of money. But in any account. That's interesting to know. I've not ever looked at it that way myself. Is that because of some rule changes the past few years?
No, that's been like that for years.
Okay. Well, good to know there if somebody's needing to shift money at the end to lessen that burden. So what was the January 15th deadline again?
That's the last quarterly payment that's due for 2016.
Okay. So you have time to right the ship as well, correct, even though you may have affected some earlier. I may have a little bit of that on underestimating this year. If you have a financial situation or a tax question, just like some of what I've just asked Jude Heath, give us a call, 504-260-0995, as well as you can email me, gregory@gregoryricks.com. That's the email. The website, you would know then, is gregoryricks.com, or utilize the Gregory Ricks and Associates app to message the show. Just doing a scan here to check, see if I have anybody that has sent in an email. Don't have any yet. And of course, if you're thinking, well, I'd just rather talk to somebody at the office next week, you can go ahead and call the office now and we'll call you back and make any of those requests through the other methods. The office number is 504-832-9200. So is there any other things that need to be looked at year end? So we've kind of focused, we want to make sure they have an idea of what they're going to owe next year, and that's probably subject to change.
Of course,
we always want to find more deductions, but I'll tell you, in the practice, and you and I are going to talk more about that this in the next 60 days, is that we are rolling out some concepts and strategies to help people that pay a pretty good bit of taxes, some strategies of how, through proper structuring through their small business, that maybe they can save money efficiently or more pre-tax, and then of course later take it out tax efficiently. And one of the reasons for that is I need my help as well. So we have invested some money to increase our knowledge base on that side. And Stacy, a couple days ago, she said, you do know I really dislike taxes and the IRS. And we were having a discussion, and I was just kind of being frank about where we were tax-wise, and I felt it's way too high. But it always is way too high. It's kind of like when they say, you know, pay your fair share in taxes, or, you know, women should be equal pay. Well, how do everybody always comes that in their campaign as, okay, we're going to make sure women earn the same wages. Well, they darn sure do at my firm. We don't have that imbalance that some guy's making more because he's a guy. That's not going to happen. In fact, I have more women employees than men. I don't know. Maybe I have some biases would show up statistically, and I'm a fair guy. But then when you also hear is, we're going to make sure the rich pay their fair share, and that's probably, and I don't know what they consider rich because we haven't quite had that definition, but you'd be surprised. You think, well, I'm not rich, but they probably think you are. Let's look at it that way. And what's that fair share? And then I'm looking at it from standpoint, oh, I'm way over my fair share from it. So, and somebody else might think, Gregory, you don't pay nothing like you should. Well, I think I'll pay you way too much. So it's kind of, where is that number? So that's that thinking. And then of course, Stacy dislikes IRS. She dislikes taxes and all together. And that's not where she's about not paying or dissolving the IRS, which would be a good idea of dissolving them. But it's just, it's not an easy thing. And when you kind of look at, if you're going to buy a car for $30,000, what does it cost you really to buy that car? Because you, if you factor in taxes, that could be $40,000, $45,000, $50,000 to buy that car. More, when we come back, we're going to pay a few bills here. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk Radio. But you got to keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down.
my pockets, kicking these rocks. It's kind of hard to watch this life go by. I'm buying into skeptics, skeptics mess with the confidence in my eyes. I'm seeing all the angles, thoughts get tangled.
Welcome back. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks and James Parker. No James Parker today. He's on extended shopping spree that started the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. He was all over Black Friday and now Small Business Saturday. Mentioning Small Business Saturday, go find a small business in your community and do some business with them. I like small businesses. I'm a small business, big small business, I'd like to say, there from that standpoint. But don't worry about me today. Call me on Monday, on Cyber Monday. And why would you wait? I'd rather just go online and search right now. Why wait? Look for your small business online as well. And that's where we, from a social media standpoint, we've been all over that for years. That's back when people like thought, why would you want to have your firm online, Gregory? Why would you be involved in social media and having a blog and posting? Here's one of the reasons is back then it just wasn't the end thing and I couldn't quantify anything, meaning could I justify the money being spent there or does it make us money? And I didn't look at it as does it make us money, but are we relevant? If somebody's looking for more information, can they find it? You know, are you going to show up? And now it's where everybody understands that concept. And actually, online brings us a great deal of customers because they go check us out. Our website traffic has just grown tremendously through the years. And, you know, look, if you're a small business and you're kind of, well, how should I do my website? Well, go look at my website and see what we've done and how we use videos and information and different subjects to where they have a better understanding of what they can receive in doing business for us. If anything, it helps educate the potential customers, but it also allows our clients to have access to information, keep up with the show, keep up with their accounts because of the GPS page. You should check that out also. What are your thoughts from online with regard to a CPA business?
Yeah, of course, we've been online with the different social media and website and that for years, just as you. But you know, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking about your firm's development in that regard is, you know, I've been to enough of your events, a year now's worth, and I think your touches, the number of touches that you touch your customers each month or each year, your customers become very friendly. And so it's an open exchange of ideas. Hey, Gregory, I had this idea. What do you think about it? And so you wind up imparting wisdom to them. And over the years, that makes for a better financial decisions.
You know, we've probably given you some guidance on your website.
Yes.
And presence on the web. So we could probably just call that the social presence, but that's not out the norm for us to do that because we are observant of our team members and such of the Total Wealth Authority and make sure you're doing some of the stuff that you should and connect. And that spidering goes both ways because it's kind of like seeding the corn. The story about a farmer that just, his corn was unbelievable. But what he did was a weird thing is he would share his seed with other corn farmers in his area instead of like holding back. Oh, I can't let them have my secret stash. And the way he looked at it, if they kept growing inferior corn, it would affect his eventually. So he wanted to improve their status. And that's where something I realized about my show is the financial community listens to my show early on, which really surprised me. I was having a drink at a iHeart Radio gathering for one of the shows back in the early days of when I was on, we had started this show, and there was financial professional was explaining to me how he was using some of my ideas to improve his business. And I was like, what? Why are you I'm running through my head thinking, what? Why are you listening? You can't be using my wording and some of my ideas. And that's when I kind of saw that story. And you know what? We do want everybody to be better. We want everybody to act as a fiduciary. We want everybody to put the clients first, and we want them to quit using loaded tools, bad financial tools. And if you start thinking of the client first, it will take care of those things. And that's the way it is with our wealth team, is we want all of our team members, you know, knowing the secrets and to do better with their firm. And then you're taking the financial burden off yourself because you're good. Then you focus on the clients and the money comes to you. And that's how we think all the time as well. So from a tax business, you know, and we're always looking for ideas, and you and I talk about those as well. And some of the focus of what we're going to have is helping everyone become more tax efficient. Judge Learned Hand, famous judge from the federal bench, no longer with us, but one of the things, and I'm not going to exactly quote him, but basically in this famous quote of his, he's saying that we are under no obligation to pay more to the IRS than we're required. So what I found is a lot of times is some firms are afraid to use some of the actual tax laws in place that allow expenses and deductions. And one of the reasons they say, what, you know, that might cause you to be audited. Well, heck, you're liable to be audited anyhow. And if you're going to use a deduction, you should have all the paperwork, contract, everything in place to do it. Then you should be good. I don't believe in gray areas, taking deductions that you shouldn't. There's no cheating whatsoever. Not with those guys. They say, yo it, yo it. But with that said, it could be you did some errors. And there was one where James had to have one fixed because he failed to disclose something. Well, he wasn't aware, but the hot redhead had sold some securities to help come up with the down payment, and that, and they looked at all of that as being taxable, and very little of it was because they didn't cover what was the cost basis of that security. So once that was fixed, and I'm not sure, that may have been you that fixed that for him, but I know him and Dwayne are loving you a lot right now with what you did for him on the recent tax year. So, but that's where we got to make sure who you're working with is not fearful of doing the right thing.
And that's absolutely right. We've run into previous preparers where we'll pick up a return from prior year, and they're too scared to notify the client that, hey, this did, if you would have tweaked your transaction this way or that way, that would have been a deductible event for you. So we much like you, and that's why we get along so good, is we are in information sharing. We interpret the tax law and we distribute it. And we want as many taxpayers as we can serve taking advantage of the tax laws that are available. As you said, nothing that's outside the law, no cheating, all within the law. And if you do that and you assemble your paperwork and you're ready for an audit in the year of filing, you shouldn't have to worry about an audit.
So you actually have a publication in front of you. What is it? The Bradford Tax Institute?
Yes.
You know, I've been getting a subscription to that, it seems like, forever, and use some of those ideas on the show and sharing and good stories. And you had sent one over to me that you wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, it was just something in the PATH Act that I thought some of the listeners could take advantage of and understand a little better. For commercial property, they in the PATH Act, they highlighted a term called qualified expenses, which is a qualified expense is basically interior improvements that A, do not enlarge the building. B, do not include elevators or escalators. Or B, do not do anything with load-bearing walls or interior structure, or that sort of interior structure framework. But within, except for those three items, every other improvement to a commercial building is a qualified expense. And the qualified expense in year of placed in service becomes subject to the 50% bonus depreciation election, which is really nice. If you put that just in numerical terms, you buy a building for, say, $300, and you put $100 into it, into improving it, you get a $50,000 deduction that year. So the reason why I wanted to highlight it is it was the 50% bonus is only available for 16 and 17, and then starts to reduce through 18. I think it goes to 40% or that sort of thing. Nice little deduction hidden in the PATH Act.
We'll talk more about that when we come back. Oh, I love this breakaway music here. Hey, you're listening to Winning at Life. This is the Weekly Wrap with Gregory Ricks. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Going to pay a few bills. You're listening to us on iHeartRadio. Winning at Life, the Weekly Wrap with Gregory Ricks, where you can get your financial fix today for a better tomorrow. You know, show Winning at Life doesn't necessarily tell you it's a financial show unless you're thinking from my standpoint, but it is. How do we judge that we're winning? How much emergency money do you have? How much retirement dollars do you have? How many real estate properties do you have? You know, what have we accumulated? And it's not that you're going to keep score publicly, but we've all been given a gift that our grandparents didn't have, and that's an extra 30 years of life. You have to look at it that you're going to be around to age 90. And I already feel the pushback. I'm not going to be around that long. You don't necessarily know. And do you want to be surprised by it and be short of money? Because what's the number one question retirees or those looking to retire ask? Will I have enough money? Will my money last? Will my income keep coming in? And that is kind of the focus of what we do. Now, when we went to the break, our guest this hour is Jude Heath of J. Heath & Company, and he was talking about this depreciation bonus. If you do improvements to your property this year or next year. So kind of review that, and then I've got a few comments and questions.
So this particular depreciation bonus is on commercial properties. Ordinarily, the improvements would be depreciated over 39 years. But because of this special provision in the PATH Act, it allows you, if you do interior improvements that are not structural based, no elevators or escalators, and they don't enlarge the building in any way, the value of those improvements internally, you can take, for 16 and 17, you can take half of what you place in service that year. So following the example of if you bought a $200,000 commercial building and you put $100 on the inside to fix it up nice before you entered it, you would get a $50,000 deduction.
So what about stucco on the front of my building?
Interior.
Okay, so I've got to get in the front door and freshen it up, move around some walls, fresh paint, new lighting, new curtains if it's a restaurant, you know, freshen it up.
The way it reads, as long as it doesn't move around walls.
Okay, or, can't move around walls.
Right. You know, with
but freshen up. There's, you know, because there's some restaurants I noticed, and you and I were talking about this on the break, is, you know, they've been around for a long time, successful. One of them we used to do business with on a regular basis, and it's just so old and stale. and 30 years of smells. And this would be a big help to business. And I'm not just talking about restaurant industry, but this is something there where you can, if you did 100,000 improvement inside of your business of whatever it is, maybe it's something where you need more storage shelves and such to do that up and improve the flooring. And you know, here's one of the things when you think about business, and this is how I think, no matter what we do, how do we show up? What is that first impression that you receive when you come in? And I go for that when I walk into other businesses, because I'm thinking that, you know, I'm wow me, you know, look successful, look busy and such as that. So I think that's a great thing. Spend $100,000 and you can go ahead and depreciate now 50% of that expense. Correct. Boy, that makes it more palatable to go and make some changes, even if you're having to borrow some money.
And that's good until the end of 17. In 18, it falls to 40%. So not 50%, 40%.
That's still good, yeah. But it's going to go away over the years.
Correct.
Kind of.
It expires in 19.
Unless we can get them to extend it.
We might have some good
tax
changes.
That goes back to Roth conversions. Back in 2010, you had the conversion opportunity where you didn't have to pay the tax of the conversion in 1 year. Technically, you did it the right timing. You could have almost 3 years to pay that tax over. Gosh, wish they'd do that again. That was a cool opportunity to do conversions. One of the things we were wanting to talk about today is self-directed IRAs. We have people ask me as well about that. Do you get a lot of questions on self-directed IRAs in regard to real estate?
We do. We get several clients a year that inquire, how does it work? We've had a couple of clients that have taken advantage of it over the years. And it seems like if you can make sure that it fits your retirement strategy, it's something that could work for you.
It's not something I necessarily advocate, because there's too many things you can do wrong in it. We're kind of more about how this is the things you should look out for. This is what you should be careful of. We don't manage those type of accounts, but you hear self-directed accounts, or when you hear that gold commercial and they're saying you can put, you know, you can use your IRA to buy gold. What they're talking about is you're using a third party trust company to do so. And this isn't like you're using our firm, Fidelity Investments. Well, I want to go buy me some gold bars and put them in storage. We don't do that. We can direct you to third-party custodians to assist you with that. And our focus of the conversation is self-directed IRAs. And there's kind of three firms that I give out when people are looking for somebody to help them with that. And that would be Pensco Trust Company. Their website is pensco.com. That's P-E-N-S-C-O. Intrust, which is the intrustgroup.com. That's Intrust is spelled E-N-T-R-U-S-T. And the third is Equity Trust. So it's trust, etc. .com. So it's trust and then etc.com. The three biggest mistakes is unrelated business, taxable income, or UBTI. Prohibited transactions, I think that's where, to me, that's kind of like a number one. And commingling personal and IRA funds, and I think that's where that gets people right out of the gate there. Now, you had mentioned to me you kind of have some thoughts on people that typically get into real estate. Seems like they just get all in.
Right. And that's my concern, is that when we talk to clients about moving their whole retirement portfolio to a self-directed IRA because they think real estate is everything and they're all in real estate, we worry that maybe if they had a health event, that real estate is not as easily convertible to cash if they needed to get to it.
You're right. You kind of have to list it, promote it, and have somebody come in and make offers.
Right. And as you brought up during the break, you know, if they didn't do it larger, they could just become a maintenance man, you know, buy themselves a job as a maintenance man.
Yeah. So, my thoughts on real estate is I just wouldn't get into it for one or two properties. I think ultimately you have to think of it as a long-term objective. Keep easing yourself in. If it goes well, then you buy another, and that would be kind of looking at, well, get a property a year for the next 10 years. You've gotten to where you need to be, 10 properties. Somewhere between the start and there, this should be a business to where you're not the guy repairing the toilets at midnight on Saturday or the AC at noon on Sunday.
What we think of is that it's a nice supplement to your retirement planning. It surely cannot be all of your retirement planning.
I think not, because here's one of the problems. Let's say you have 20 units and they're all where it's never flooded. Say Baton Rouge area. Then all your properties are flooded. Now what you gonna do if you didn't have enough cash flow, emergency cash, or necessarily have everything insured properly? You just went out of business. And that's what we see a lot of, is where people get into it, then they don't have proper emergency money. They weren't peeling off profits and put it. And this isn't that you've got to take and put it in equities and put it at risk. You just need to save and put it somewhere else, even if you are just getting 2-4% a year on that money. We're going to continue this discussion on real estate inside of self-directed accounts. You are listening to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks on News Talk Radio.
I want bourbon, I want scotch, I want beer. I'm having a record year. Quarter notes and Hank's halftime. I'm pounding on this heart of mine. Song to song, I pass my time. These speakers on 10. You're good and gone, keeps me up on.
You're listening to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks, and we are on iHeartRadio. I think I've made a couple of mistakes on my outs today. Been doing this 6.5 years and I can't remember. What are we doing? Well, we used to always say News Talk 99.5 WRNO when that was the only market that we're in. So I kind of still catch myself doing that or making up some other name at times. But yes, we're on iHeartRadio and we're doing this live. We started at 10. We go to 1. We do it on weeknights at 7 as well. And if you can't catch us on your station, jump over to iHeartRadio and type in those station call signs, and you will find us if we're preempted or you're just wanting to use your smartphone, computer at work. All that works to catch us. And the iHeartRadio app is free to download. And I actually use the app every day, but I tie it in with the Gregory Ricks and Associates app to get to it through that. When we went to break, I have Jude Heath, CPA. His company is J. Heath & Company, and he's a part of our Total Wealth Authority. And I'm going to have you give out some phone numbers right now, or the number to reach you, and web address.
Sure, it's 504-832-1873, and the web address is jheathcpa.com.
And if you can't remember that, just go to gregoryricks.com. He's linked there, or call my office, and my top-notch team will see that you get connected with him. We've been talking about self-directed IRAs because we get questions about those. We don't advocate necessarily doing real estate inside of your IRA, and you have to do a self-directed IRA to do so. And we were kind of, once again, I'm always talking during the break. I'm not going to sit there and be quiet. So, and we were talking about, you know, having real estate should be a business, but just should be part of what you're doing. And I'll tell you, I have too many real estate people come in and they're big in real estate, and they have no other money. That is a flaw. It should be part of your mix. And one of the reasons is all your properties get flooded, and they were in Baton Rouge, and you didn't have flood insurance because it's never, ever flooded there on that part of the earth ever that you know of. Well, it has now, so that kind of turned into a big mistake. If you have a question for myself or Jude, it's 504-260-0995. Email me, Gregory at GregoryRicks.com, or use the Gregory Ricks app. So one of the things, I kind of threw out a number. Say you have $500,000 in your 401k or something, you're thinking about doing real estate, and you made the comment that that's not going to get you 10 properties. Well, first off, I don't think you should focus on using your IRA for this task to begin with, because if you mess it up, you're creating a huge taxable event. I can give you story after story after story that I've seen, and self-dealing is prohibited events. What does that mean? I've got a client that did this, and he bought some 40 acres with his IRA for farming. And then he sold himself 5 of the acres. That's a prohibited event, and that is self-dealing, whether it's him or his wife, his kids, or relatives, or somebody that has a beneficial interest with them. You can't do it. So let's see how easy it is to mess that up. So I don't think you should use your IRA, but some people do. My preference would be to use after-tax dollars.
Correct.
Now, you brought up something that people also don't think about, and that's liquidity problems. And that's just they don't save enough money. What might be, and having an emergency, you need it, or somebody bolts at midnight on the 29th, and you thought they were moving out on the 31st, and they take the sinks and toilets with them. So now you've got problems, and you need cash.
Or if you have a vacancy for a few months.
Oh, yes. It's not guaranteed to stay rented. They move on, and you got to find somebody else to rent that. But here, let me give you a stat. Since you're listening, I'm going to give you this number, and we're talking about real estate. Let's see. Still the American dream. The national home ownership rate in the U.S. as of September 30th of this year was 63.5%, down from a peak of 69.2% in December 31st, 2004. Percentage point reduction in home ownership rate represents 1.2 million households that have changed from owner to renter status. That doesn't necessarily mean your house is going to get rented, but look how that's changed over the years. You know, that is crazy. Now we have instead of less renters, we have 1.2 million more from that. Just very, very surprising when you look at that number. And I guess that's the mortgage rules, how they've changed and such. But even with low interest rates, we have more renters. So, hey, maybe it won't be out of rent for too many months. But here's another look. See, how will you actually withdraw the property as a required minimum distribution? Real estate is not a liquid investment. Eventually, that property has to be withdrawn a little bit at a time based on life expectancy. See, when you reach 70 and a half, you have to start taking required minimum distributions from the account. And if there's no cash inside of that IRA-owned or self-directed IRA-owned real estate, how are you going to take that out? That's kind of problematic. Or, you know, if that window breaks or you need to repaint the property because the renter moved out and somebody else is wanting to move in, you've got to clean up. Where you're getting that money from. It has to come from inside of the IRA. If your IRA owns the real estate, it may be difficult to withdraw from it. For example, if you're 70 and a half, if you're 70 years old and your RMD factor is 27.4 years, then you'll have to deed 127.4 of the property to yourself from your IRA as a distribution and do the same based on the new factor for every RMD in the future, unless you have enough cash in your IRA to make an IRA distribution. One of the things we discussed was somebody to have $500,000 in their IRA. Let's see, what would they more likely to be, in their 60s or age 30?
Going to be, of course,
in their 60s. They're more likely to be in their 60s than 40, likely to be more in their 60s than 50. So then they're approaching required minimum distributions, and you have to think about that. Now, it should be drawing rents, and rents are going back into the IRA. They can't go elsewhere. If they are, they're considered a distribution. And they have to do the repairs, the upkeep, the taxes. Everything has to be paid from the IRA. So you've got to keep in mind of how this transition, and what happens to RMDs every year?
They go up.
Yeah, they're going up every year. So it means you've got to maintain that cash going forward. What would be the better scenario? If you're going to use your IRA for self-directed, then you make sure that's a mix of the assets that you're using it for. I wouldn't focus that money on that, and I would much rather do it with after-tax dollars. We could probably spend 3 hours on this topic here and all the things that kind of go wrong with it. So, you know, the golden rule I'm going to end this topic with today is the golden rule. There is no self-dealing allowed in IRA transactions. If the IRA owner somehow, some way receives a benefit from the transaction, it is probably a prohibited transaction and should be avoided. And if you're getting into a transaction, you cannot go put a down payment with your money, engage in that purchase yourself. It has to be the IRA doing so. So if you're wanting more help on paperwork and how this would work, my preference would Pensco, PENSCO.com. Go to their website and look for more information, but find another way to do it besides your IRA. Any thoughts in wrapping up today, Jude?
Well, it's been a great first year with Gregory Ricks and Associates. I've really enjoyed it. I enjoy coming on a radio station, and Merry Christmas.
We had I had an awesome Thanksgiving. I hope everybody did too. We are looking forward to the Christmas holidays coming up. And once again, and go into next year, we're going to be here for you. You are, and we've got one more hour to go. We're going to pay a few bills here and be right back with you. You're listening to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap on iHeartRadio. I'm back. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. This is our final hour today. Yes, believe it. To me, it's just flown by, as it always does. You're listening to us on iHeartRadio. This is live radio. You can call us 504-260-0995 if you have a financial situation you're looking for some help with. If you're looking to say, darn, I missed the end of Jude Heath's hour, for example. You can go beginning of the week, go to my website, go to your, basically, are we on all the markets as far as downloadable? Yeah, I think so, but I'll just tell you, go to WRNO.com. We're there. But go to GregoryRicks.com. We have all the past shows. You can search us on iTunes as well. So once again, 504-260-0995. If you're looking for a financial fix, you can do so through emailing me, Gregory@GregoryRicks.com. Go to the website. There is a chat box on the site you can interact with. Gregory Ricks app. Go to your app store and download that. You can link and message the show. And we have a member of the Total Wealth Authority joining us. It's Wes Blanchard of WJ Blanchard Law. At one point, Wes, hey, it's going great. At one point, I was thinking you were on the show today. I was like, no, it's Jude Heath and Dwayne Stein of Mortgage Gumbo.
Yeah.
We well, welcome for a few minutes. So it turned out you are on the show.
Yeah, you're right.
So what you got for us?
Well, I wanted to talk next week. We're approaching, obviously, the Christmas holidays, and I wanted to just harp on why it's so important, especially around the holidays, to think about some estate planning and to really check up on some of these things that are easy fixes for you, such as the beneficiary designations and maybe getting a will together. It's the holiday season. I think everybody's thinking of everyone else, but sometimes, you know, it's a really good gift to think about yourself in the way of helping others later down the road, or any charities or anything like that. So I just wanted to chat a little bit about that. Keep it light.
Yeah, and that's one thing that came to my mind when you mentioned the overall topic is beneficiary designations. You've got to have some time to always review those and make sure those are right.
Right, and it's not, you know, estate planning is one of those things that can be easily procrastinated. So if you get it to the forefront of your mind, maybe around the holidays, and then look, New Year's is not far around the corner, and maybe that's one of your resolutions there to kind of get your estate in order.
Yeah, sometimes we'll have family come in and I'll ask, when was the last, do you have a will? Yes. When was the last time it was reviewed? 16 years ago. You think some things have changed during that period, Wes?
Yeah. Yeah. There's been some massive changes in, you know, not only just in the structure of estate planning from a federal legislative perspective, but certainly from a familial perspective as well. There's certain to be changes that have gone on, maybe grandkids, maybe great grandkids. So those are the things that, yeah, you need to sit down at some point and think about. And, you know, what better time to do it than when you have those folks in front of you at your house, and, you know, you're enjoying the holidays.
Well, Wes is going to join us next week. Hey, football question for you. You have a thought on football?
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have seen the news yet. But,
yeah, I have. It's Coach O.
Yeah, I really love it. Look, if you're not going to play hard for that guy, I don't know who you play hard for. You know, obviously he's got some concerns with his history and things like that, but he motivated that team. And, you know, if he's going to go ahead and they're also talking about hiring Lane Kiffin away, I think that would be, you know, a good start, and certainly would reignite that LSU-Alabama rivalry if they can pull out some wins.
Yeah, I'm excited, and I, you know, he lost to Alabama, but played them best of anybody this year. Florida was, what, a couple of mistakes or one play away from winning that tight one, but everybody else, he's kind of kicked some rears, and I like that. I like good winning spreads in a game, so I'm pumped. I already have a Blue Dog picture with his signature on it, and I have a signed helmet from Coach O. So I was like a week and a half ahead of this. Like, I'm pumped. I already got a couple signed pieces from the next great LSU coach. Hey, see you next week, Wes.
Sounds good, guys.
Yeah, I'm excited. I thought that was like the best news. I was like, and besides, I was talking to my brother-in-law. I was up with family in Hattiesburg and got a brother-in-law that's an ER doctor up there. And He was when they were talking about the Houston coach, he was just like, you know, it's from Conference USA. you know, how has that gone well for, and he's a big LSU fan as well, living up in Hattiesburg. He says, well, how has that gone for him in the past when they've hired coaches from Conference USA? I said, well, actually, it's not gone too well. He said, that's my point. That's enough reason to not do it. So this. Hey, this hour, we have a great guest. He always makes it a fun listen. Side, I'm kind of more the technical guy, maybe too serious for the whole 3 hours. So I've got Dwayne Stein, one of the longtime members of the Total Wealth Authority and host of Mortgage Gumbo, which comes up the next hour.
And he's also an LSU fan.
And he's a big LSU fan. Hey, Dwayne, welcome to the show. Good to have you here today.
Well, Dwayne, he'll be right, but yeah, we lost his mic here.
Okay. Well, we'll give him a minute. They've got a technical difficulty, and now I've got an echo on my side here from that. Is it still there? No, it's gone now. Okay. Working out a couple of details there. But heck, I enjoyed that win the other night. I was thinking, you know, Thursday, I was like, gosh, LSU plays Saturday, and I've got something going on that's conflicting with that. And then finished watching James Parker's favorite team, and that's, Dallas Cowboys with Dak and Ezekiel, both the rookie quarterback and rookie running back, and they knocked out the first game of the season with a loss, and after that, they've been winning, and then the game went off, and the next thing we realized, LSU's on. And that's when I figured out it wasn't that they're going to be on Saturday. They're going to be on Thursday night. And I was visiting relatives up in Mississippi, and it turned out I got to sit and watch the game as well. That's really the only team I've actually watched all of their – I'll sit down and watch the whole game. Saints, you know, look, I'm not raining on them, but I just can't do hours on end of football from that standpoint. So last hour, we talked about owning real estate in your IRA. If you do it, there's a number of things you've got to look out for, big, costly mistakes. So you can grab that off of a podcast beginning of the week by going to my website, getting more information. And if you have more questions, you can call the office, 504-832-9200. Let's see, another year, another $1 trillion. Our nation's debt was $18.922 trillion as of December 31st, 2015. Anybody know what that number is now? Anybody? I do. Oh, it's a total that has reached $19.898 trillion as of Wednesday. That's pretty darn close to another trillion. I thought we had this under control. So does that tell you how much we're going to be at in 20 years at this pace? Adding a trillion a year, we're going to be bumping this another debt ceiling at $40 trillion. How does the math work on that? That is just spending going completely the wrong way. Completely the wrong way. And I just don't understand where that's going to go. I think it's the wrong way. I don't know that the next administration gets that correct at all, but they've got a lot of work to do. Hopefully they don't push it up or accelerate it too much. That's just a monster of a bill to pay. Okay, so we're going to have Dwayne Stein right now. Hey, Dwayne.
How you doing, Greg?
You're host of Mortgage Gumbo that follows us at One, and you've been a longtime member of the Total Wealth Authority. Hey, I'm doing great, by the way. Welcome to the show. You having a great Thanksgiving extended weekend.
I really am, boss. And, you know, Greg, I heard you talking to Wes, and I thought that was, you know, I know you're excited about it. I think everybody today, it's a feel-good story, hiring Coach O. We'll see how it goes next year.
Oh, you know, it would have been the case if they had hired the guy out of Houston as well. And that, his numbers look good. But when I looked at his, now I went and looked at his stats as an offensive coordinator and head coach. And yeah, he's won some big games, but there's nothing off that sheet that was just like blowing me away. I'm like, well, so what's the big deal there? And you go back and look at Coach O's numbers over the years. Yeah, and that was an ugly one at Ole Miss. And he can explain to you looking back what he did wrong and how he coaches now. And also he had another great program to learn at, and that was he coached at USC and was an interim coach there that I think he went 5-2 or 6-2.
Yep.
When he took over that, and I just think the guys learned a lot, and that's all about coaching, is they've got to learn all along the way to have the chance at being a great coach, and I was impressed with what he did during his interim. We can talk about that a little bit more, mortgage rates and so much more. We're going to take a break to pay a few bills. This is Winning at Life on iHeartRadio. Yes, you're listening to Winning at Life. This is the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks. If you have a financial situation looking for that financial fix, this is where you can get it for a better future. The phone number is 504-260-0995. Do I still have Dwayne?
Can you hear me, sir?
Okay, there you are, Dwayne. Welcome,
Greg,
back to the show. Yeah, can you hear me? Dwayne? No, Dwayne? Looks like they dropped him. He is basically calling in to the show. It's a little bit of technical stuff. You know what? That's like no surprise. We've kind of dealt with that the past few weeks. So hopefully all this is cleaning up. And I know some listeners might be about frustrated sometimes at these technical problems with some of the stuff we're creatively trying to do, and I apologize because I'm very frustrated as well at times when we have technical issues. Here's something I wanted to mention, and this is, let's see, this is a great topic to go over for a few minutes. Can you hear me, Dwayne?
Yes, sir. You got me, Greg. Oh,
welcome back to the show. I was going to cover inherited IRA cannot be rolled over. Do you have an inherited IRA?
No, I don't, boss.
You don't. Okay. Well, you may one day, because people with IRA accounts don't live forever. It has nothing to do with owning an IRA. It's just we don't live forever. And, you know, regarding inherited IRAs, you know, if you take where with an IRA, Dwayne, if you have a regular traditional IRA and you take a distribution, you can do this once a year aggregate of all IRAs. And that means once every 12 months, you could take some money out and put it back in within 60 days. But an inherited IRA is you're a non-spouse beneficiary of an IRA.
Okay.
And let's say it was your dad that gifted the IRA to you. It has to move to you custodian to custodian. You can't say, well, cash his account, send it to me, and I'm going to put it back in the IRA. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're wanting to move it from, say, well, I'm firing ABC Brokerage and I want to put it in Fidelity Investments, as an example, which is our custodian, so that's why I kind of worded it that way. If you're wanting to put it in an IRA, inherited IRA account, it still has to be correctly titled, but it has to go from firm to firm. meaning custodian to custodian. And if you were to take it out, there's no 60-day rollover, so you can't, like, take it out and then want to put it back in. Once it comes out of the account, it's a taxable event, and it is not going to go back in. So just, you know, little tidbits to throw out there, because I don't think we cover some of these things enough, and that's where big mistakes happen. Tell me about what's going on in interest rates. I talked about where back in beginning of October, we had a 30-year mortgage at 3.52. We had 3.52 back in October, and now we're, I think, yesterday the close was at 4.09 on a 30-year mortgage.
Yeah, it actually, you're looking at, as of yesterday, you're looking at on a 30-year, 4.19, Greg. So
more than I just said.
Wow. Yeah, so you're looking at, since the beginning of November, this week we went over two-year highs, but since the beginning of November, the 30-year has jumped from 3.59 on 11.5 through yesterday, is now 4.19. So you're looking at, that's 60 bips. That's more than a half a percent of interest rate alone just on a 30-year mortgage. And
yeah, I was giving them a number from beginning of October to present, and darn, the past 30 days is yeah, heck, I shouldn't have went back that far and looked at it. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it's really, really just starting to affect a lot of it really has affected a lot of loans, Gregory, just simply because, you know, not everybody does business the way me and you do, Gregory, as far as forecasting and trying to alleviate surprises. You know, very rarely do we have aha moments in our business the way it's ran. We try to forecast and we try to look ahead, you know, like you with the GPS. And, you know, I've tried to piggyback off of that with some things that I do on my end with just interest rates. And, you know, so many people are coming to me now where, I mean, they just got left out in the cold with this deal and because of the rates and not seeing it. But, you know, we tried to get ahead of it. But now, once all those folks that we were able to save, the reality is now of people just having to understand that interest rates now, this is where they're going to be. And I don't think, Gregory, and I guess I'd get your opinion on this, I'm not sure if they found a ceiling yet. I really don't think we have.
You know, and this biggest part of this move is since the presidential election, I believe, bond markets also was showing at election time a 67% chance of a rate hike, and now the bond market's factoring in 94% chance. I've been at 95 for over a week and a half. I know Parker's been under 90. He kind of floats around on that.
I'm
pretty certain there's a rate hike, so there could still be more priced in coming up to that. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I really am, because, you know, all we kept hearing all year is, you know, we went from 4 rate hikes to 3 to 2 to, you know, now they're going to slam one in at the end of the year. I think they just there was no way they were going to do anything before the election. Now, had they known the election was going to turn out this way, I think we'd have seen some different things going on. But I think what we're learning is, as much as they kept saying that the rate hike was priced into the markets, I mean, and would you agree that I think that was just baloney, so to speak, to put it politely? I mean, because what everything's doing, I don't see how they could have had it priced into the market.
Oh, no. Well, looking at, when was the last rate hike? December of last year.
Yes, sir.
We had a market correction, which affect rates being pushed down. But since that January, we reached lower rates on 10-year treasuries. We were seeing almost 1.5%, lowest ever.
Right.
On interest rates, and that was after a rate hike. You thought it would have stayed at 2% or 2.1, and now we're at 2.37, I believe, on 10-year numbers, and you've seen mortgage rates push up, and we think we could see a little bit more upside, but I do think bonds and treasuries are oversold, even at this point. So, and then we're looking at some of the infrastructure building that the Trump-elect administration's talking about, is there could be a lot more borrowing go on. So I think that would tend to push rates down a little bit in the future. If we indeed have a January correction like last year after the rate hike, that would send equities to bonds that would push yield down, which in turn, and I'm not saying wait, you can get a lower mortgage rate.
Right.
We're just looking at possibilities, but it's not a certainty because I didn't think we would see 10 years go to 1.5 like they did this year.
Yeah. And well, and I think what it's done for us, and I know on my end with the mortgages, you know, we've known, and I've talked to you about this over the last, we've known that this day would come. When was the big thing? It was just a moving target. It's the cat chasing the laser around. And, you know, so what I'm looking at now is, and what I want listeners to understand is this, and it's what, for me, who's been doing this 20 plus years, I try to explain to some of my younger employees and to the clients that I'm working with is that the number on a piece of paper does not necessarily mean that because it's not what it would have been 6 months ago, that it's a bad deal for you now. So many people go, well, if you can't change my rate or you can't lower my rate by this, what I'm trying to get clients to understand and I want listeners to understand is this. Anybody, any monkey could have sold interest rates or loans over the last 4 or 5 years. Anybody. Because they said, look at this number on a piece of paper. Do you like it? Now what it's going to come down to is the bottom line is when you and Stacy go to buy bread and milk and y'all go to the grocery store, you don't go, hey, check out this number on a piece of paper. What you use is the money that's in your pocket. So now the benefit that the great thing that we still have now is values continue to increase across the country on mortgage on homes. Right. We have more equity now. Homeowners are richer than they've ever been right now. So what I'm telling my clients is let's look at doing a debt consolidation. Let's put together all your bills and let's save you $500 a month. So the number on a piece of paper might be 4.05, where it would have been 3.75 a week ago or a couple months back. But who cares if I'm saving you $300, $400, $500 a month? That's really the quality of life, and that's really what's important. And that's what we're really focusing on right now.
Here's the question I have, because we've talked about historical interest rates, and you know, in history are a little better than 4, and we're seeing finally they get back up above 2, but we're still way under what the historical average is. So give me a historical 30-year mortgage rate average.
Greg, it's way high. I mean, you're up over, I would have to say, I don't have it, but I mean, I know just a couple years back, I mean, back in 06, 07, I mean, we were selling 8, 9, 10% interest rates.
Yeah. It's gotta be well above. I would probably have to guess it's above 6.
Oh,
on
yeah.
An average.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I would have said probably closer to 7, because
we got a break right here.
Okay.
You're listening to Winning at Life on iHeartRadio.
Sunset, I bet there's a chance we could get shown up, tangled up, lay back and lazy. Pour it on easy now, don't spill a bit, nothing but time tonight. Let's get to killing it, long as I'm rocking.
Welcome back. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks, place where you can get your financial fix today for a better tomorrow. If you have a financial situation, like a little help or some help with your mortgage, we have Dwayne Stein in studio this hour, and his show's coming up right after ours. It's 504-260-0995. I was looking at trying to find on the break historical interest rates for mortgage rate history. And I came up with what, back in 85, we were looking at almost 12.5%. In 95, that rate looks to be somewhere around 8.75%. And then in 2009, we were still above 6.
Yep.
And today at, was it 4.19 on a 30-year?
Yep, 4.19. Yep.
That is cheap.
Yeah,
money.
Exactly.
So you'd have to figure the average, and I think you had mentioned when I asked you what you thought it was, over that time period, it's about 8.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing, Gregory. Money is still very, very cheap. Once I think everybody gets used to and understands the number on a piece of paper, as I alluded to earlier, and gets over the shock of, did I miss it? I think everything's going to calm down. You've been saying it for well over a year now that this stuff should have been done way back in May of 2015, I believe, is when, you know, when we were having all the jobs supposedly and all this kind of stuff. So I think it's long overdue. I don't think it's as bad as it everybody's, you know, pressing the panic button. It's only natural that a lot of homeowners have slowed down maybe the pace, but I don't attribute it to as much as interest rate as I do to the fact that it's just that time of year. This isn't the blow and go type of year. This isn't the spring season when everybody's moving and rocking and rolling. So I think what you're seeing is with this slowdown, it's a culmination of the time of year, the holidays, and this interest rate. So to be honest, I think it's really kind of coming at a perfect time.
I do too. I think it can go a little bit higher, but I think it's going to pull back some as well. As far as that timing, we could throw out weeks or months and be totally wrong on it.
Right.
But when you're looking at where we've got to go, they're going to do some more rate hikes. They're just so far behind on it. But considering the half or 60 basis points move up, yeah, it might be a little overpriced in. It may get to be a little bit more, but it wouldn't shock me to see in 2017 it dip back a little bit below 4. I'm not trying to step out there and give you some huge number or say that it'd get back to 3.5.
Right.
It is going to move around because that's what they do. But if it doesn't, and let's say it stays at 4 to 4.2, maybe gets to 4.35 during the year. When you look at historical, you know, what was that? The past 35, 40 years I was given.
Yeah.
You know, it is so much lower than what the average is.
Like you said, if we're averaging 8 and it's at 4, I mean, hey, that's a 50% off half price sale. You jump all over a diamond ring at that price, right?
Yeah, so, it's still like we're still in money is kind of when you look at historicals. And we're greedy. We want lower interest. Yeah, I want to buy my house for 0% like I did that F-150 truck, somebody might say. But right. When you think about the grand scheme of things, this is not healthy for our economy, having money that cheap. And when you look at the longer range of a country with an economy growing, the GDP growing, things improving, then that, you know what, that's a domino effect for us all. All things are going to become better. And your wages and your company you're working for is going to do better. Then you don't have to worry about losing that job.
You're going to start to see a lot more people use equity a little bit wiser than they have in the past. You know, we've talked about on this show several times how HELOCs got people in trouble. And, you know, you're going to see a lot of those starting to I've got people running through my door right now because when rates were low, they didn't care. Whenever I kept warning everybody, hey, all these HELOCs y'all took out in 2008, 2009, you know, you've got these 7-year HELOCs coming due on these things. And, you know, they thought, well, rates are so low, it's really not going to make a difference. Well, net rates are skyrocketing. Guess what? People are trying to get off of these HELOC loans as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And that's where, like you said, you're still stealing money so much. I mean, a 15-year note right now, Gregory, while in the beginning of November was at 2.90, you can still get a 15-year loan for 3.39. So, again, still very, very cheap as far as that goes.
Yeah, you know? that really is. That's still an unbelievable number. Here's a stat for you where you mentioned a lot of people probably have more equity built up. The median sales price of existing homes sold across the country during the month of October of this year was $232,200. The median sales price of existing homes sold across the country the month of 2005 was $229,000. So we went through the Great Recession, and now the median price is higher than it was in 2005.
Yeah.
That's positive stuff.
Yeah, and that's just proof that we're rebounding, and I hopefully that it's going to be a good thing. And you know, the biggest thing right now is, like you said, we can't help people if they don't have jobs and don't make money. That's going to be the name of the game. The name of the game is going to be getting these millennials in. I mean, I've got a chart here, Gregory. Millennials, the average pay for millennials, medium income for millennials in the state of Louisiana is $22,000 a year. I mean, that's tough. In the state of New York, $25,000. So you wonder, I mean, you know, where would you
rather live? I thought you were going to give me a bigger number there.
Is that crazy or what? I mean, that is absolutely, I mean, New York is 20, California is 21.9. Alaska is the highest in the nation at 27.5. And you know why? Because young people are going out there because of the oil. They've got opportunities for oil, you know? So when you look at this, my gosh, I mean, and that's one of the reasons why, I mean, when you look, I mean, am I going to live in New York for 25 grand? Or am I going to live in Louisiana or Texas where at 22 grand, I mean, the cost of living is just so much more affordable in these states.
Hey, I'm full of stats today.
Yep.
Average student debt. I pulled up here. Here's the average net worth. This is regarding millennials. Average college debt for millennials averages $37,172.
Yeah.
The graduates of this year, class of 2003, the average debt was $18,271.
Right.
And so we're talking average income, $22,000 to $25,000 for millennials.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Tough. I mean, think about it. They can't, if they've got to do, the federal government now requires us, if somebody wants to come in and get a loan with cross-country mortgage now, we have to use, they cannot be on a income reduction payment plan. So they have to either be on a fixed rate plan or we have to use 1%. So you said 37,000 was the average?
Yeah, graduating this year, 2003, it was 18,000.
So 37,000, so 1% of that. So if they want to come to me and buy a house, I've got to be able to say to them, I got to take $370 of that and just count it as a big old fat bill against you. So making 22 grand, guess what? You don't have a shot at buying a house. Making 40 grand, you're not going to have a shot at buying a house. So those are the things that we've got to get right. That's where the jobs and the infrastructure and all those things we've got to see. Or really the number, the interest rate really isn't a hill of beans. Because if we don't have people that can buy the houses down the road, it's really not going to make that big of a difference.
Well, think about this in the dating world then for the millennials. They're having to think of, okay, I have college debt, so, yep. Oh, she's a hottie. I want to ask her out, but I might first should ask, do you have any college debt?
Oh, no doubt about it.
Because even combined, it's going to be forever in getting a house if the first date goes well and it continues.
Yeah. I mean, definitely don't date somebody that's got one of those high degrees, because they're just really going to be in debt forever and a day. So get that guy that just gets that regular old, general studies degree. That's the dude you want right now, you know.
That is crazy. I've got another stat that when we come back, I mentioned it earlier, I want to give it to you and see your thoughts on it.
Yep.
On top of this discussion. Hey, if you have a financial situation, the number is 504-832-9200. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. We got to do this thing, pay a couple of bills or two or three, and maybe some college debt for somebody. You're listening to Winning at Life. This is the weekly wrap on iHeartRadio.
Just know you're not alone, because I'm going to make this place yours.
I am Gregory, host of Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. We do this on Saturdays from 10 to 1 live. Weeknights, we do it from 7 to 8 live radio as well, so you can get your financial fix. If you're needing to call me, we have a few more minutes left. It's 504-260-0995, or if you have a question for Dwayne Stein, You want to call Gregory during the week, that's me. The office number is 504-832-9200. And even if you call now, somebody will answer your call, one of my team members. Dwayne, I still have you with us?
Yep, I'm here, sir.
Technicals are working great today then. Here's the number. Still the American Dream is kind of the heading. National home ownership rate in the USA as of September 30th of this year was 63.5%, down from a peak of 69.2% December 31st of 2004. A 1 percentage point reduction in home ownership rate represents 1.2 million households that have changed from owner to renter status.
Wow.
That doesn't help your cause, does it?
Wow. No, that does not. That's quite frightening. And, you know, and I talk about this a lot with when I go and speak to agents. And the one thing I try to get folks to understand is when they're talking about all this good stuff about how foreclosures are down and all this kind of different things that you hear and how, hey, home ownership and all the reason why foreclosure rates and all this is down is these big corporations are coming in and they're the ones buying it all up. So that's why when you hit, they're coming in and buying these properties from the banks where they don't have to foreclose, and they're coming in and getting these massive areas of property. And they had one bank this past 2 weeks ago came in and bought like 400 and something thousand properties across the country. I mean, that's unheard of. So why would they're doing that? Because they see opportunities, right? Look at downtown. Look at all those new high rises going up. Those are rentals. You know, if you drive over on the North Shore to Pinnacle area, they just put up over 1,000 new apartment complexes. Those are rentals. They're not condos. Those are rentals. So no, that doesn't make me feel real good. And again, you take that with the rates and different things going on, there's still some more pain that we've got to go through with this. With that said, I think as values improve, it's going to be okay, but we've got a little bit more pain ahead with interest rates and just the fact that home ownership, that's quite frightening. I mean, you're talking about over 7 million homeowners are now renters. That's a ton.
That could represent a lot of things. It could be mortgage rules, obviously, sure, are a little bit tougher. It could be the college debt that we talked about. It could be, it seems this income's kind of low for millennials, along mm-hmm. with the debt. And maybe the lack of work has affected, but you've got 1.2 million increase in renters when we think it should at least hold steady. Could that number of renters we have showing up in the marketplace, could that still increase versus home ownership for a little while? With rates going up, I would kind of think so.
It has to, Gregory, with rates going up. I mean, I just ran some numbers while you were speaking, just to kind of give listeners an idea here. On a $180,000 average home, which is pretty normal for the metropolitan area here, on $180,000, the difference between that 3.59 just 3 weeks ago compared to the 4.19 today, it's a difference of $63 a month in payment. So while some people are going to go, well, that doesn't seem like that much. Well, that is, because that's quite a bit of money when you start talking about now insurances and different things like that. When you add $62 to your monthly bills, that's quite a bit of money just for the same exact house. There's a lot of adjustments. So it's not good. And I think it is something that we're going to have to continue to deal with as we go along, no doubt about it.
On one hand, kind of looking at it as glass half empty there, but we could switch, is it tells us there's a coming opportunity for realtors and mortgage people, and there's values that if we've had that much increase, there's a lot of empty houses still sitting out there that has to become values at some point, going to need mortgages and going to need agents helping find them. So I think for your business, there is an opportunity coming, a wave of it.
Yeah, there is. The thing is with it is in our little world here in South Louisiana and South Mississippi, so to speak, there is going to be opportunities. But if you're a builder and you're building something out there, you're not building that starter house at 160 or 170. You're building that $350,000 house. And that's what we're seeing. The inventory out there right now is on those larger priced houses. You really can't find the $150,000 to $160,000 houses or even lower. So that's where, when you start looking at everything across, there's opportunity, no doubt about it, but we're going to need these jobs to come back and different things like that. So people start moving into these more expensive homes, as opposed to, or we got to go figure out how to get the starter home, get them out of their home and get them willing to upgrade and pay more. And that's what we run into, because while somebody know, I know I can get more for my house today than I did 2 years ago, but am I willing to go pay somebody else more money for their home? That's the double-edged sword right now that everybody's sort of dealing with, and that really, when I talk to home buyers, that's what they're trying to contemplate. Is it really worth it to me to move down the street? I mean, 63% of homeowners, Gregory, stay in their same metropolitan market. And when I read that, I thought that was pretty unique right now. I'm sorry, 61% have stayed within their same metropolitan market over the last year. So if somebody's moving, they're staying in that same exact area. So I don't know. Maybe that is where it's going to be. You're just going to have to kind of see exactly what's going to happen as far as that goes. But only 24% moved to a different state, and that's a 15-year low. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy. It really, really is.
I know a young couple that, let's say they're on the back half of mid-20s, you mm-hmm. know, up moving to that other half in between 25 and 30, so millennials.
Yep.
College debt combined, I think, is neighborhood of 80,000, and they had a relative put a signature down to help buy that home. So when, and it's kind of like a small, you'd call it small starter home, something they sure. want to move up from.
Right.
But the moving up is, you know, the numbers in your head. That's a difficult move up.
Yep.
With that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's an average. It's an to move up. People, there's the average is $61,000 higher price point when they do move up. So you combine $61,000 more in home value, along with 60 basis points higher in interest rate, and jobs being a little cheaper. I mean, it's a tough road to haul. That's for sure. You know, it's really, really going to make it difficult. So I think that's going to be the trick for agents and me and going forward is, hey, how do we go get some of these folks that are sitting in these houses right now and get them to go, hey, you know what? Yeah, let's move. Let's go figure that out. That's where the next move is going to have to come from, because it's not going to be able to come from that millennial who's knocking down $22,000 a year.
Yeah, they're going to have to pay down debt. They're going to have to save more money.
Right.
And you know, here's that kind of saying. How much do you need to save? As much as you can. It's when do time. You need to start? Yesterday.
Right.
In fact.
Right.
Hey, we've got yep. just a short time left. Let's tell the listeners what's coming up on your show. Mortgage
we've
combo.
Got today, we've got, today's going to be a best of, I've got a couple things when I leave out of here today. So we've got a best of plan, and really we're just, it's education and options, Gregory. That's what our show is all about. It's keeping folks in the know and making sure they have some opportunities to know exactly what you have out there. So whether it's credit, purchasing a new home, your credit bureau, whatever it needs to be, we're going to be discussing that today on Mortgage Gumbo.
Awesome. Look forward to it. It's always a great show. You've contributed a lot. I, you know, it's kind of that time of Thanksgiving, and I am very thankful you're a member of the Total Wealth Authority. You just bring so much to the plate. I'm telling you.
Thanks, Paul. Couldn't do it without you. Appreciate you taking a shot on me, man. All the thanks is towards you, that's for sure, sir.
Well, you're welcome as well. So you have a great weekend. We've got, a minute left. If you're looking for some financial help, we're back on Monday night live. If we're preempted in your market, you can go to iHeartRadio and pick us up on the stream. Go and download that app. You know, I'm very thankful for this show, thankful for all of those that are listening that keep coming back and listening. Our average listening audience stays tuned for 45 minutes of the show. Be careful out there shopping. Go see your small business today, and we'll be back on Monday. You're listening to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks. We're on iHeartRadio.